You are listening to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church.
Did this ever happen to you recently in any way? During lunch at school, have you had a classmate ask you, are you a Democrat or a Republican? You ever have those questions? During a break, your coworker or colleague asks you, who are you voting for on Tuesday? Do you support the immigrant caravan? You walk past your neighbor to go shopping and she says to you, do you support Judge Kavanaugh? What do you say about that? Before you even answer those questions, you really have to ask another very important question. We forget this, but Jesus did not forget this. We have to ask ourselves deep down inside, the answer that I give to this question is not just a matter of deciding what my view is and sharing that view. It's not even necessarily a question about what is the best possible answer to give or what is the true position to take. The answer you give to that person needs to consider the fact that they may not even know the Lord as their Savior. They may not understand spiritual things. And the answer that you give must keep what is most important in view. How you answer those politically charged questions like that is not a matter of revealing your political perspectives. You need to think, first of all, how will my answer affect my ability to speak the truth about Jesus to this person in the future? That's the question that you need to ask. Your response, and we forget this, is going to determine your ability to speak with that person later about what really matters. In America, we're losing the art of knowing how to have a meaningful conversation with people, and that is not good for the gospel. We fail to recognize that our words in present moments will affect future opportunities that we have with people in the future. We're busy, we're impatient, we have no time for thoughtful interaction. We're looking for ways to get out of conversations, not into them. We bypass any interaction that exceeds the 280 character limit of a Twitter post. We try to stick to the 40 characters or less answers that fit into a little color box on Facebook. And we refuse to read any news article beyond the first or second paragraph. If you've ever taken a journalism or writing class, you know that you're supposed to cram all of the enticing, important information in the first paragraph or two, because no one reads the rest of your article. We don't take the time to take a thought from beginning to end and really work it out, whether it's in reading or in writing or in, most importantly, actually talking to people. We're losing this art. We're also losing this art of conversation for another reason besides our attention spans and our impatience and our technological crammed ways of saying things. In our society, we are learning, we're being pushed into, we're being kind of forced to almost press all sorts of topics, and the list is growing into one category or another, and there's only two categories. We're either Republican or Democrat. We're either liberal or conservative. We're either progressive or traditional and tolerant or intolerant. And the buzzwords and the conversations get, this keeps going this direction. We can't stop that from happening. It is part of this world system. Did you know this world system is governed and guided by Satan to take the truth about Jesus Christ and neutralize it and cut people off from it? That's what this world system is designed to do, to take the voice of truth and to suppress it. And one of the ways this is happening today is by cramming every sort of topic into one category or the other and making both sides very politically charged. that prevents us from talking about a lot of things without political problems. We call this a false dilemma. Maybe you've heard that before. A false dilemma is when someone sets up two options, A or B, black or white, yes or no, and you're supposed to answer that question and identify with one answer, and you're saying to yourself, but there's more than two answers here. And the other side insists there's only two options. This two-category approach teaches us to listen for buzzwords, catchphrases, viewpoints, and then once we hear those little pieces of information, then we're automatically able to decide, aha, this person is that, or this person is that. And we make that decision, and we listen to nothing else that person says because we already know, we think everything else that they believe, because they're this or they're that. And this kind of person on all these a million things is like this, and they're over here, and this kind of person is like this. We have this problem, and it's a growing problem in America. Unfortunately, Christians walk right into this subtle trap. We're more interested in letting people know what we think about politics without stopping to think. By doing that, we may miss out on an opportunity to tell them what really matters. We cut off a whole category of people, no matter what side you're coming at this thing, politically speaking. You cut off a whole side of people and you take the truth about Jesus and stuff him into one of these boxes when you put yourself in one of these boxes. And what I want you to understand today as we read John chapter 18, Jesus was being baited with a political trap and he refused to step into it. He refused to take the plunge. He refused to be boxed into that corner. When we adopt the mindset that I just spoke about, we embrace a political model and blindly identify with one side or the other, and we drag the truth of Jesus right along with us. And that is unnecessary and unfortunate. We must be very sure that though our faith should influence our politics should not hurt our faith. And our faith is number one, and our ability to speak about the truth of Jesus is our number one priority. You know, it really doesn't matter what I think about every other political checkbox there is. If what I say about that will damage my ability to speak about Jesus, I need to handle that opinion carefully. Because if anything, at the end of the day, I want people to know the truth about Jesus. The truth about Jesus, we're going to find today, the truth about Jesus transcends political conflicts. Do you believe that? I think today we might actually think that the truth about Jesus causes political conflicts. Now, the truth about Jesus will not eliminate conflict, but it does avoid political conflicts. It rises above. I think if you take a step back and look at what's going on in America today, there are Christians screaming at each other on both sides of the political aisle, missing what is most important. And I'm not saying there aren't important things in the debate of politics and position. I'm not saying that. You should vote, and you should vote according to biblical values. But what I'm saying is we are often allowed these discussions to dominate our conversations with people, and we, by doing that, lose the ability to talk to them about what really matters. I don't like that so many things have become so politically charged today, but you know what? They have. And so I have to handle the words that I say. There might have been things I could have said 30 years ago that were true and right. But today they've become so polarized that I have to avoid saying it, just kind of saying it like that. Because today people don't quite understand it the right way. And I don't want them to misunderstand the truth about Jesus. Let me say it this way. When you understand the truth about Jesus as your spiritual king, is he your spiritual king today? Is Jesus your king? Is he your master? Is he your Lord? And did he lead your life last week? Did you follow his ways, his words, his teachings? When you embrace the truth and understand the truth about Jesus as your spiritual king, and you commit yourself to being a voice, a witness for the truth about Jesus, That mindset will guide you through the labyrinth and minefield of political opinions and feelings. Here in John 18, 33 through 38, in Jesus' own trial before the Roman governor, this is a very political situation here, Jesus, in a dignified and gracious way, avoided the trap of political polarization and made it possible to speak the truth about God to this man. If Jesus had not answered this politically charged question that Pilate asked him carefully, he would have missed out on an opportunity to speak the truth of eternal life. Even though what he could have said would have been true, he stepped around it because of the political charge there, and he readjusted the conversation carefully and thoughtfully to avoid the politics so he could get to the truth. And I think we can learn from this. The truth about Jesus deserves this kind of attention today, and it deserves us living as Jesus shows us. As we jump into this passage, I want you to consider a verse that Paul gave to us in 2 Corinthians 6:3. He picks up on this principle we see here that Jesus lived out for us. He picks up on this principle. He says this in another place, in a different way. He says, I have become all things to all men that I might by any means save some. What he's saying there in that verse is, I look at my life and I make a decision about what things are flexible, not really that important, and I will change those things so that what is important can be taken to people. If I go to India and I know that when I sit on a chair at someone's house and I put my foot up like this and show you the sole of my feet, that that's disrespectful, rude, and obnoxious, I don't go over there and say, well, I'm an American. That doesn't mean anything to me. I will put my shoe up, and that's your problem. By the way, you're arrogant in your culture. You look down on Americans, but let me tell you the gospel. That is not what Paul would do. Paul would keep his feet on the floor so he could give the person the gospel. We get that. But my question is, are we allowing that mindset to guide us through the political minefield that we're walking in these days? We're not as careful with our politics, I don't think, sometimes. And we're cutting off opportunities for the truth. Paul said here in 2 Corinthians 6:3, we give no offense in anything that our ministry may not be blamed. This is a ministry principle of Paul. This is something that he used to conduct his life and his ministry. Friends, the gospel itself is offensive. No one likes you to tell them that they are a sinner headed to a Christless hell and Jesus is the only way to God. Now, there's better ways of explaining the gospel, but a lost person will hear that kind of message no matter how nice you try to be with it. That's what they get. That's a very exclusive, kind of a guilt-laden message, they might say. The gospel is offensive. There is no way, as Paul describes the gospel, to remove the offense of the cross. You can't do that. The cross is offensive. However, we cram a lot of other stumbling blocks into our message by the way we present that message. Things that are unnecessary, like I mentioned, if you're in India, do not show the sole of your feet. It's disrespectful. If you're over in China or some of these places and you're speaking to someone older than you, look down. Don't stare at them in the face. It's disrespectful to stare at them in the face. You say, well, that's in America, you look at somebody. Well, in America, you do that. But don't do it in China because you want to give this person the gospel. Learn to decide what is important and what is not important. Paul said, we don't want to cause an offense in anything because we don't want our ministry to be blamed. We don't want anyone to be able to look at the message of Christ and attach it to something that is wrong. Which is why, as a pastor, I don't think you ever have, and you probably will probably never in the future hear me very much at all tell you directly what I think about a particular political figure. Why? I have thoughts, just like you have thoughts. But the moment that I step out and say, I am for this guy, and I want you to know this is my guy, and I think this is God's man for the moment I start saying things like that, if that guy or that woman makes a wrong decision, proves to be immoral, or somehow or another in their political platform, though they have good things that I like, they have other things that I don't believe are right, but by identifying with that person, I now have identified with their ups and downs and their entire platform, and anyone who disagrees with me in this politically charged climate that we live in, when they find out that I preach about Jesus Christ, they associate what I represent as a necessary part of that platform or that personality that I have aligned with. Does that make sense? And I don't want that to happen. The gospel is not a Democrat or Republican thing. It's not a President Obama or a President Trump thing. It's above that. It's higher than that. It's more important than all of that. And I don't want it to be tied at the hip to any of that. And so as a minister of the gospel, and I would challenge you as a Christian, be very careful how you handle these things so that you as a person can be a mouthpiece for the gospel to anyone. Not half of the population, because the other half has written you off because of your political views. That's what we're talking about here. Paul says, I give no offense in anything, that our ministry may not be blamed. When he went to Jerusalem with Timothy, Timothy had some things in his life that he had not done because his father was a Gentile. And when they went to Jerusalem, he told Timothy, you go into the temple, go through a few Jewish procedures. They're fine procedures, they're not necessary for a Christian to do, but we have a message to give to the Jewish people. And if they look at you and you have not gone through these Jewish procedures, having had a Jewish mother, they're not going to listen to you. He says, you go through these procedures, circumcision and so forth, do these things, because we want them to listen to what matters. If he went to other places, he would set aside his Jewishness and focus on the fact that he was a Roman citizen. He explained his experience as a Roman citizen and focus in on that. Oh, he was glad to be a Jew, but he would take that aside. He would not brag about it. He wouldn't mention it. He wouldn't make it a big deal. He would point out the flaws of the Jewish mindset in that day so that he could speak to the Roman people about the gospel. See, as Christians, a lot of times we take our ethnicity, our political views, our opinions about this and that, and we wear them all in our shirt sleeve, and we cut off so many opportunities to talk to people because they write us off. We need to learn to keep some of these things quiet and more nuanced so that when people know us, they know us as someone who speaks about Jesus, who cares about them. First point I want to point out today is avoid political entanglement. I'm not saying avoid all political involvement. I'm thankful for political people who are Christian. I always take that with a grain of salt because I don't want them to let me down. But I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for laws and things that are said and done that support a peaceful, productive Christian life. But we have to avoid political. The key word here is entanglement. Here in John, verse 18, Jesus says in verse 33, Pilate, he's a Roman governor, politician, entered the praetorium and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? What's the answer to that question? Yes, he is. Did Jesus say yes or did Jesus say no? Jesus sized up the situation. He was not talking to a man who understood the question he was asking. He was talking to a man who had one thing in mind. He did not get along with the Jewish people. Whenever he came into conflict with the Jewish people, he wanted to win that conflict. He wanted to have the upper hand. He was a man who wanted to win a political point. The Jews, they wanted to win their political point. These are two different sides here. Well, the Jewish people wanted to crucify Jesus. They wanted him executed, but they didn't want blood on their hands. So they wanted Pilate to do the dirty work. Pilate wanted nothing to do with it. He didn't want to kill this guy. And he was a very cruel person. If you study Pilate, he had a very cruel history. He was a bad character. But you want to kill this guy unnecessarily. The Jews gave him a question, so he was trying to cut right down to it. He said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Why did he ask that question? Because if Jesus said yes, what that meant to Pilate is that Jesus had a plan to cause an uprising against the Roman Empire to break away from their government. That's what he thought that meant. So he said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Well, Jesus could have said, "Yes, I'm the king of the Jews." And what that means, according to the Old Testament, is the Old Testament does tell us certain things. Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 through 7 says, "The government will be upon his shoulder. His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. The increase of his government and peace there will be no end, upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever." Micah 5, 2. "To you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from of old." Oh, Jesus was the king of the Jews. This was a title rich with theological depth and meaning. This was not a place to give a theologically correct answer. Someone says, "Are you for Judge Kavanaugh, or do you support abortion or women's rights to life?" Or whatever angle at this thing you're coming at, these questions come up, and you have an answer, right? And you believe it's the right biblical answer to give. But the question is not, can I give them the right answer? Because if I give the right answer, they may understand it the wrong way. So is that something I want to lose? If Jesus had said to Pilate, "Yes, I am the king of the Jews," the conversation would have ended right there. Jesus was not afraid to die. He was not trying to protect his skin. He intended to die. So he was not here to protect himself. I am not saying keep your political and personal and cultural perspectives quiet because you don't want to get in trouble. No, that's not what Jesus was doing. He was just wanting an opportunity to speak the truth of eternal life to this man. That's why he handled these political questions with kid gloves. Carefully. Someone asks you a politically charged question these days, you come out, "No, that's wrong. I'm against that." Or, "No, this is my candidate," or, "This is my part." Before you say those things, stop and think. Is this going to prevent me from telling them about Jesus? Jesus did not say yes. Jesus did not say no. He asked a question. He said, "Pilate, are you asking this question because you thought of it, or are you asking it because the Jews told you to?" He understood politics. Pilate was fed that question by the Jews. He was trying to make a quick decision that was effective and efficient. He didn't want to have this conversation. He was trying to expedite this process by cutting to the chase. Jesus said, "No, I'm not doing that." Where did this question come from? Well, that question put Pilate in an interesting position. Because this question raised the point that Pilate was simply saying and doing what the Jewish people told him, which made him look weak. So he came up with a question of his own. So now Jesus is not talking politics. Now Jesus is talking to Pilate personally. Does that make sense? You look in the next verse and it says, Pilate asks him, "Well, okay, so you tell me what you have done. Why are you here? You tell me." So now Jesus is able to have a conversation. All I'm saying, friends, is avoid the political trap like Jesus did, not to save your skin. You may still end up getting in trouble. But get in trouble for the right thing that was worth it. You really want to have a person-to-person, heart-to-heart talk about what really matters. This takes self-control, doesn't it? This takes going to work in the morning, planning to be a witness for Jesus. If you get up in the morning and get all the headlines and rush off to work and go in and someone pops a political question, if you didn't come in as a witness for Jesus, you're probably going to mess that thing up. And the sobering thing about that is that person may hear your answer to that political issue, and if you ever try to invite them to your church or talk to them about Jesus, they may never listen to you ever again because they already have you figured out, they think. You're that kind of person, whether you gave a good answer or not. We have to be focused on this. So during lunch at school, a classmate asks you, are you a Democrat or Republican? Think like Jesus. How do you answer that question? I'm not asking now, how did you answer that question last week? How should you answer that question? So I have strong views about that. That's fine. Jesus had strong views about being the king of the Jews. He was the king of the Jews. That's a big deal. That's not what he answered. Because he cared about Pilate's soul, not the political problems of that day. We have to get better at giving thoughtful, nuanced answers to people that avoid the political obstacles and keep the door wide open for the truth about Jesus. So Jesus then goes on and he introduces this concept that he is a spiritual king. Verse 36, Pilate says, okay, you tell me what you've done. Man to man, verse 36, Jesus says, okay, Pilate, let me tell you. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. He points out a couple of things. One, he points out that he is a part of a kingdom. Pilate, you're right. I am a part of the kingdom. It's not the same kingdom that you're running right now. It's not the Roman Empire. He's handling this thing carefully. But he's saying it's not from this world. Like, this is not a political kingdom like you're here trying to figure out. I'm not here as representative of the Jewish nation in a political sense. I'm not here representing Egypt or Greece or Babylon or Assyria or some other country. That's not that kind of thing. In fact, Pilate, let me explain to you just to kind of allay your fears here so you're not worried about what I'm saying. If I had the kind of kingdom you're worried about, then I would have done what you do. All of my followers, my people, my soldiers, they would have fought. They would have had a fight, a battle, hand-to-hand combat with the Jewish people who tried to arrest me. Now, interestingly enough, he was being very nice here. The Romans had also sent soldiers to arrest Jesus. They served kind of as a backup protection in case a battle did flare up. It almost did. Peter almost did. Which is another example of how believers and followers of Jesus Christ easily get pulled into political conflict. I cringe whenever I hear a news story that some radical right-wing conservative Christian was burning a flag or was, you know, shooting up an abortion clinic. That's ridiculous. Jesus would have put a stop to that before it ever got started. It has nothing to do with Christianity. That is not how Jesus' servants follow him. No government in the world should have any worries about a Christian group going hand to hand with them to get their business done. That's not how we do things. Jesus says, look, if I was the kind of kingdom that you're here to prosecute and to keep pushed down, I'm not that kind of kingdom. My kingdom's not from this world, and if it was, we would have fought. I wouldn't be standing here today. That's true, right? Pilate has to think about that. Jesus is a spiritual king, not a political one. He is not in competition with your president, your monarch, your senators, your prime minister, your representatives, your governor, or your king. He is the King of Kings, and he is the Lord of Lords. Kings come and go. Queens come and go. Presidents, monarchs, rulers, governors, they come and go all the time down here. But Jesus is ruling in heavenly places, far above all principality and power and might and dominion. These are kingdom, political words. Every name that is named, not only in this age, but in that which is to come. That which is to come, that's today. He's saying, not only is Jesus over the Jewish leaders that have their problems in the Roman Empire that has its problems, going to eventually persecute Christians as well. All these political kingdoms that have come and gone throughout the church era. Jesus is high above all those things at any given time. The pieces come and go, the battles, the crusades, the elections, and Jesus sits on his throne. That's the king we serve. He's a spiritual, heavenly king. He rules today from a heavenly throne in a spiritual way through the hearts of people who have believed on him by faith and are his spiritual children. As believers who are part of Christ's church today, we carry out our lives with a mission of presenting people the truth about Jesus. Everybody needs to follow Jesus as their spiritual king. Did you know that doing that makes you a model citizen in any government? A model citizen in any government. You should be able to follow any government that God places you under, any political leader that God places you under. You should. And be the best one they've got. Who follows laws and doesn't complain about them. Even when they tax you to the end of the earth, you pay your taxes. You follow the laws. You never complain. You don't riot and stomp and burn and all of these kind of things. You don't cause violence. You go about your life in a quiet, peaceful, reliable way. Oh, and when you get the chance, you talk about Jesus. And if you get in trouble, that's what you get in trouble for. Any government eventually is going to come to that rub. Problem is, they usually get Christians in trouble somewhere else for poor behavior. Behavior that Jesus avoided all the time. You, if you know Christ, are a part of a spiritual kingdom. You are a dual citizen. You understand that? You follow two sets of laws. Heavenly laws and government laws in this life. At the end of this conversation, Jesus is talking here. Pilate says, "Are you a king then?" Jesus doesn't quite say yes, but he says, you're saying that I'm a king. Yeah, basically. That's why I came into this world. And this is the reason why I come. That I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. What he's saying here is, I came here not to fight a fight with you or with the Jewish people. I didn't come here to score political points or to have a military campaign or to take out anyone's political party. I didn't come for any of that. I came as a king who talks, who shares ideas that are true about God, and people who understand what I'm saying follow me. That's how my kingdom works. By the way he describes this means this is a kingdom that does not overthrow governments. It has followers in every single government who obeys their government. Does that make sense? There are so many governments in the world today with Christians in them and under them. That's the spiritual kingdom that Jesus came to build, one that is based upon ideas, true ideas, concepts, words, thoughts, principles that come from God, that reflect God's nature, that appeal to who we are made in God's image. Every person needs this information, this knowledge, this truth, these ideas. We are people of ideas, the right ideas. And we want people to hear these ideas. And we want them to hear these ideas in a way that is not glued at the hip to political turmoil. We want to be able to talk about these things off to the side in their own capacity. Does that make sense? So now that he got down to the real heart of the issue, he said, Pilate, I have a kingdom. That's why I came into this world. I'm a king. I'm not a political kingdom. I'm not here to have any kind of military battle. You can mark my words, that will never happen. There's no threat of that. And there's no evidence for that. The Jews have none, by the way. So there's no case here. But if you know what I'm saying, you want to hear the truth that I'm telling everybody, we're going to keep this conversation going. The word hear doesn't mean that the sound comes into your head like noise. Hear means you hear what I'm saying and you respond to it with personal devotion and action. Well, how did Pilate respond? He said, well, what is truth? What is truth? For politically motivated people like Pilate, and may I add the Jewish leaders as well, truth is frequently sacrificed for political expediency. One man writes, many politically oriented people pretend they are interested in the truth, but Pilate summarizes his politically oriented life with the haunting question, what is truth? People involved in politics are often people unconcerned about the truth. They want to accomplish certain goals and agendas that have political purposes and personal issues behind them. And let me tell you, they will use truth to get people to follow them as far as they can take it. But they'll change. I heard someone call it this last week, election season conversion. They'll change views all the time. They're counting on that. They're counting on you saying, oh, they think this, and then they don't think that. It takes real research, effort, and prayer to vote wisely and to conduct yourself properly as a Christian. But all of that being aside, can we just recognize that fact? The political world is not a world of truth. It's a world of pragmatism. We have to make sure we don't identify with that. Now, did Jesus win Pilate's heart? Was Pilate one who heard his voice and followed him and joined his spiritual kingdom? No. Did Jesus know that would happen? Yes. If I was Jesus, I would have looked at Pilate and said, there's no time for a conversation here because he's not going to listen. This is a political guy. He has no spiritual bone in his body, and I know, as Christ, he will not come to the Savior. I know that. It's not worth my time and effort to have a thoughtful conversation with this man. It's a waste of my time. Jesus, in his ministry, other times did the same thing, right? Remember the man at the pool of Bethesda who was lame? Jesus walked up. He healed the man. The man never said thank you. He actually turned him into the Jewish authorities and got him in trouble. And the best Jesus could say to this man then was, well, just don't go sin anymore so nothing worse happens to you. But he never got thanks. He never got anything positive out of that help that he provided. Be very sure that you don't act yourself with the truth in pragmatic and political ways. We size people up. We have tendencies to say this person, and we do the same thing. We put them in a category, then we decide they're not going to listen to us because of their beliefs and their lifestyle, and so therefore it's not worth my time to try. Jesus knew the outcome, and he still handled it carefully. Friends, the truth deserves that you handle it carefully, whether the outcome is favorable or not. Do not be like Pilate and use the truth politically only when it seems expedient. In fact, Jesus still got hung on the cross, didn't he? But he handled the truth carefully because it deserved that. And he showed us how to keep the truth about Jesus separate from political stereotypes so that it remained pure and presentable and precious. Paul said, we give no offense in anything that our ministry may not be blamed. I want to just encourage every member of Faith Baptist Church, do vote. Vote according to biblical values, and there's no way to do that perfectly. You will search to the end of time, and you will probably never find a political platform, a person that is just perfect from beginning to end. You're never going to find that. So pray, have wisdom. But all that aside, let me just say, handle those things carefully. What is really important these days is the truth about Jesus, the spiritual kingdom that we are presenting, the love of the Savior, the change of life that he can provide, that relationship with God that everybody needs. Voting for or against certain items in our country are important at certain points, but those votes do not change lives. And we often spend our personal life and capital on those things, and we sell out our ability for decent things, though flawed. We sell out our ability to represent the gospel in its most powerful, precious, pristine form. I'm okay dying and people not quite knowing who I voted for and what party I was a part of. I'm not really wanting to be a part of a party, but these things are things my wife and I talk about, maybe some friends and I might talk about, but honestly, that's handled carefully. I want to be a person who's dying someday, and I'm known for someone who those things were secondary, and Jesus Christ was what I cared about. Anyone in the world would be able to hear that from me and know that I cared about them no matter where they were at on these issues. So we all need to embrace. Jesus embraced that. Do not allow your political agendas to overshadow the truth of God. Matthew 22 and verse 21, Jesus said, well, in this passage, he taught us to be a witness for the truth, right? To be a witness for the truth. How do we do that? We give no offense in anything. We've talked about that. In one place, Jesus helps us. He teaches us to obey our government, even when it's inconvenient. He says things like, and the Jews were always trying to trap him with political questions. Which party should you pay taxes to Rome or to the temple? And Jesus said, hey, you pay your taxes to Rome, you pay your taxes to the temple. You pay both of your taxes. How's that for an answer? They were trying to figure out which one. He said, you pay all of them. Paul took that principle in Romans chapter 13. Do I have that verse up here? Romans chapter 13, and if you study that chapter, he says not only pay your taxes, but you obey every other law. Sometimes I hear Christians badmouth laws of the government because they're inconvenient, or the government's not a Christian government. Friends, the Roman government killed Christians systematically in the Colosseums. And yet, they were the most obedient, respectful, supportive citizens in the land. We get sucked into these things like a vacuum sweeper. We have to stand apart from this political landmine that we're living in today and represent the truth of Jesus. Follow laws. Obey laws. Friends, do not go around blasting whoever your president is with sarcasm. And I really get tired of seeing online Christians and even pastors saying sarcastic, crude, mean things about political leaders on both sides of the issue. That is not our business or our place. We pray for these people and then we vote in certain ways, but we live as Christ lived. He is the judge, not us. It'd be a beautiful thing if every member of Faith Baptist Church was known for the truth about Jesus and was known for handling conversations in life carefully so that the truth can be presented clearly. When your colleague asks you, what do you think about the immigrant caravan this week? Who are you voting for next Tuesday? How are you going to answer that question? I hope it's like Jesus. And maybe at the end of the day, they will never know what you think about those things. But they will know that you know Jesus, and they will know that you want them to know Jesus, and you will know that you love people who live in your country, and they will know that you love people who are bad, and they will know that you love people who want to get into your country, whether they want to do it the right way or not, and they just know that you love people, that you love Jesus, and you want them to know Jesus too. That's what they should know. There are times we have to disobey our government, right? Acts 5:29 tells us that. Only in those times when your government disobeys God. That's all. When your government, not when they disobey God, let me rephrase that, when they tell you to disobey God, there's a difference. Governments disobey God all the time. That doesn't mean you throw them off. You disobey government peacefully and quietly when they tell you to disobey God. That's the only variance. If the government passed a law tomorrow telling us we cannot gather together for worship like this, what should we do? We should all get in our car, jump in the subway, walk exactly like we did last Sunday, and come to church and worship like this. There should be no change in our behavior. But we shouldn't do it with riot signs and, you know, all these kind of things going on and saying sarcastic things on the news media about our unrighteous government. No. We just keep our mouth shut, and we go about our business, and we keep loving people, talking about the truth. We just keep doing that. And if that gets us in trouble, well, that gets us in trouble. But that's the only thing. Jesus rose above the political infighting of his day, and I urge members of Faith Baptist Church to do the same. There should be no one in this world that you are unable to share the truth about Jesus with because of how you've handled political matters. Isn't that a convicting thought? It's true about our cultures too, by the way. How can we continue to have a multicultural church like we do? By resisting the urge to push our culture on everyone else's culture. It's a challenge, isn't it? It's a humbling, difficult, rewarding challenge. And we learn to work together, appreciate one another, and then the truth about Christ rises to the top, and we worship and adore him. Questions that I propose to you have happened to you, they will happen to you, and I want to challenge you. Think about Jesus. Are people going to follow him as their king because of how I answer questions? Or are they going to associate him with a king in this life and not listen anymore?
Thank you for tuning in to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church. We are conveniently located in Corona, New York City, and are devoted to loving God and making disciples. For more resources and helpful information about our church, visit studygodsword.com. We'd also like to extend a personal invitation for you and your family to worship with us on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning, followed by a luncheon and an uplifting time of interactive Bible study for teenagers and adults after that. If you have young children, they will really enjoy our exciting Bible-based children's ministry that also occurs in the afternoon session. If you have any questions about the church or would like to learn more about how to have a personal relationship with God, please give us a call or leave some feedback at studygodsword.com. We would be thrilled to meet you in person and show you firsthand what God is doing at Faith Baptist Church. Until next time, may God richly bless you.